Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. You all can't see me because I don't have video for the podcast in a lot of cases, but I've got a new mic stand and it's fucking attacking my face. Like, it's so close and I kind of feel, I don't know what I feel like. I don't feel very secure. Anyways, you can't see me. I'm going to put a picture up on my Instagram story today, but I got a new mic stand and it's literally in my face. So if you can hear me like super clearly today, that's probably why, but it's making me feel very uncomfortable. So anyways, I digress. That has nothing to do with today's episode. There we go. There's my mic story. Anyways, today's episode is going to be a Q&A. I've been getting a lot of questions in recently, and because of my schedule with the writing of the new book, which is Rewire Your Mindset is the working title at the minute, which should be out hopefully before Christmas, I haven't been able to do as many of the Question of the Day podcasts as I would have liked, just because of scheduling, trying to prioritize getting that final draft of the book done so that it hits its Christmas release date. So today's episode is a Q&A. Based on ones that have been sent in through my Instagram stories, my 10 question Q&A on Instagram. So if you're following my Instagram, Brian_Keen_fitness, on Monday to Friday, I put up my 10 question Q&A. So these questions have all came in from there, and they're wide ranging today. They're kind of all over the place. So I hope you enjoy. So first question, tips for the beach body look before a holiday. So this is kind of assuming that you're already relatively lean, because when you want to kind of get that last 5 or 10%, there's a couple of strategies that you can do and implement that will definitely push you and make you quote-unquote peak. So I did a podcast about 2 years ago. I'll actually try and link it in the show notes, how to peak for a holiday, festival, or event. And I know that's one that I get tagged on a lot this time of year because people go back and listen to that episode because it's very specific on what to do with your carbohydrates, what to do with your food in general, what to do with your water, and if you should take any natural diuretics, things like vitamin C or dandelion tea, etc. So when it comes to the beach body look before a holiday, I've got a couple of things that I'm going to expand on from even that episode. And that's understanding that, one, you obviously need to be relatively lean to start with, because there's no point peaking a physique that you haven't worked on. And to go hell for leather with a massive calorie drop, or thinking that you can just do like a water cycle or a water load where you increase your water and decrease it, and that's going to make you look better if you haven't put in the work beforehand, that's not really how it works. But assuming that you've been training consistently, eating well, and you're kind of relatively happy with where you're at, but you just want to look your best and peak for a holiday, festival, or event, or whatever it is that you're trying to look your best for, what I would advise is firstly look at your nutritional strategy, which is your carbohydrate intake. So when I used to compete in fitness modeling, bodybuilding, this is something that I had to manipulate quite a lot, because when you step on stage, you're trying to bring your absolute physical peak. So all the muscle striations, everything that you've worked on, you're trying to showcase that on stage, because that's effectively how it's marked. Like, it's like a beauty pageant. Like, I feel like a fucking poodle when I was standing up on stage. It's like, oh, jump, Brian, jump. But that's effectively how it's marked. And so your goal as someone that was competing, or my goal as someone that was competing, was to try and look my absolute best, which means that I had to try and peak at a certain day at a certain time. And carbohydrates are a massive way to do that, because when you reduce your carbohydrates, and the analogy I always used to like to use for filling out, quote unquote filling out, which is like where you feel your best, your fullest, your all the nutrients of the food, particularly the carbohydrates, the water, feel like it's filling your muscle and you just walk around feeling really, really good. And you look amazing with that. But the analogy I like to use for carbohydrate loading and carbohydrate restriction was kind of like filling up a water balloon. What you want to try and do is completely release all the air from a water balloon, i.e. drop your carbohydrates very, very low and glycogen deplete yourself, so you're low carbohydrate and you're taking that all out of your system. And then you want to pump it back up. So it's like blowing up the balloon. That's effectively how a carb drop and a carb load works. So when it comes to that, the strategy depends on what you've been doing up to this point. I've always been a little bit more fat adapted than carbohydrate adapted, meaning that my carbohydrates never went that high anyways because I just don't respond as well to them as I do fat. My body just works way, way better off a higher fat intake and then a kind of a carb cycling approach where I'd cycle my carbohydrates and I'd have one very high day or two very high carbohydrate days based around my leg session or based around when I was doing a metabolic conditioning workout. But if you're more carb adapted, meaning that you work better off a higher intake of carbohydrate, then your carb cut and carb load is going to look slightly different. It's just going to be reduced. So what I used to do, and this is probably the best advice I can offer because you can kind of tailor it around based on where you are, because depending on your gender, depending on your starting point, depending on your carb tolerance, your fat adaptation, your numbers are going to look completely different to this. But what I used to do was a week before a show. So if I was trying to peak on a Saturday, so for a show or a photo shoot on a Saturday, on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, I would drop my carbohydrates very, very low. So I used to go to like between 0 and 50 grams of carbohydrates. So only broccoli or spinach was the only type of even trace carbohydrate I was getting in my system. Outside of that, it was fats, so almonds or protein sources, which is chicken, fish, or steak. And I was keeping my carbohydrates very, very low. And then on the Thursday, I would go from 0 to 50 grams to about 150 grams, and then I would double that on the Friday. So I'd go from 150 grams on Thursday to 300 grams of carbohydrates on a Friday, and then based on Saturday and how I looked, I would just kind of play around with it. Normally, it was around that 100 to 200 gram mark, and that tended to work quite well for me. You tend to store about, the majority of people, about 400 grams of muscle glycogen, stored carbohydrate in your muscle glycogen, and then another 100 grams or so in the liver. So most people will never need to go higher than, say, 500 grams on a carbohydrate load, but again, depending on your metabolism, hard gainers, people who struggle to put on size may need to go a little bit higher to fill out, but that can work very, very well from a carbohydrate intake standpoint. And then what that does, as I said, it's like the balloon. You're letting all the air out of the balloon on the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. You're completely depleting. So you're in the gym, you're doing your workouts, normally very, very high volume repetition. So I was doing 50 to 100 reps on lat pull downs, bicep curls, chest presses, just trying to deplete my body of glycogen completely so that I could load it up on the Thursday and Friday. And that's what tended to work very, very well for me. When I'd combine that then with water, that was the difference between what I used to think of between looking like a 9 out of 10 and a 10 out of 10, i.e., you know, subjectively 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10 in terms of the best version of you you could be for that stage, or in this case, holiday or event. What I would do is I would reduce my water intake on the Monday, Tuesday, or apologies, I would load my water intake on the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then I would start cutting it back on the Thursday, Friday, and then about 16 hours from a show, I used to cut it out completely. So on the Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, I would normally drink on an average day about 4 liters a day. I would, at the time when I was competing, I went up to as high as 8 liters, so doubling that. I actually found I worked better with 6 liters, so increasing it by another 2. So on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I'd go to, say, 6 liters. Again, this is relative to you. If you don't drink 4 liters every day, don't go to 6 liters. If you normally drink 1 liter every day, try going to 2, you know, increasing your water intake on that day. And what happens there, for anyone that's ever played around with water or has gone on to a program, i.e. my BKF online program or somebody else's program, where they've told you to drink more water, you find you're running to the bathroom a lot more that week or two, first week or two, until your body adapts. That's what you're trying to do with a water load. You're trying to trick your body to thinking it's going to get 6 liters every day. So after Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, you're consistently getting 6 liters, and then you start to reduce it back. You start to pull all that excess water out from underneath the muscle, and it can make you look better. So what I would do for a holiday is slightly different from a show, is if you plan to go away on the Saturday and want to look great for the Saturday or the Sunday for the weekend and for the holiday in general, I would, if it was me in this circumstance, would load my water on the Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, and then I would go back to drinking normal amount on the Thursday and maybe half my normal amount on a Friday, just so you look your best on a Saturday. Again, if you're competing, if you're doing a bodybuilding show, a bikini show, a photo shoot, you may want to experiment with cutting water completely 16 hours beforehand. But again, always be very strategic with your approach. because of the dangers that can come with dehydration. So that's what I would advise. So if you're looking to go away on a beach, and look your best, guy or girl, I would experiment with some version of that strategy. So you're playing around with your carbohydrates, you're playing around with your water, and you may want to add in some natural vitamin C, a vitamin C supplement, or maybe some dandelion tea that will work as a natural diuretic. So there are some tips and tricks that I would advise, I would suggest you consider coming into the holiday. And they're just some things I used to do for my competing days. Man, that throws me right back to my fucking poodle parading around days. I don't think I'll go back to that anytime soon. But now that's a little bit of inside tip on what the competitors do that can work for you in a holiday setting. So next one. What do you make of a 5x5 program for building muscle? So 5x5 program, for anyone unfamiliar with that, is five repetitions of five sets, normally based around compound lifts. So you go in and maybe do five sets of five repetitions with 2 to 3 minute rest for deadlifts. Then you rest and you do the same for bench press, and you rest and do the same for squat, and some variations normally built around compound movements. I'm not actually a massive fan of 5x5 for building muscle, because it's not a muscle building program. You're not working within muscle building parameters, you're working within strength parameters. So muscle building parameters are kind of that 8 to 10 rep range, 60 to 90 second rest, 3 to 4 sets. That's kind of your hypertrophy, your hypertrophy parameters where you're going to build the most muscle. 5x5 is more for building strength. That's not to say you won't build muscle with it, because you might, particularly if you're genetically inclined to put on size, you probably will build some size and shape in a 5x5 program. It just may not be the optimal way if that's the main goal. What I would probably consider is, by all means, try it. And 5x5 can be a really, really good program for giving you a solid base and a structure if you're within your first year or two of training. More so because it makes you obviously physically stronger, because you're working for quite a low rep range compared to hypertrophy parameters, which is double the rep range, i.e. 8 to 10 reps. But you're also prioritizing compound lifts. And a mistake a lot of people make when they're trying to build muscle is they go in and do isolation exercises for their biceps, they do some extensions for their triceps, they do some flies for their chest, and all those movements are great secondary movements, but there's nothing going to beat the bread and butter compound multi-joint movement exercises, i.e. your bench press, your barbell row, your pull-up, your military press, your squat, your deadlift. Those movements are the movements that give you the best bang for your buck. And nearly everybody listening, that particularly if body composition is your goal, should have them as the foundation of your program, and then have the secondary isolation movements like bicep curls, tricep extensions, etc., built in around that. You know, I was talking to a guy in the gym earlier. He's a 15-year-old kid and a 15-year-old teenager, and he was telling me about his workouts, doing bicep curls and leg extensions. And I was like, he was like, what do you want to do? He's like, I kind of want to look like you a bit. And I was like, all right, you need to go back and do what I was doing to try and put on size, which is the compound lifts. And I was explaining that to him. And it's very tempting to work mirror muscles, you know, guy and girl, depending on what you're trying to build. But to build the best overall shape, do those isolation movements, but do them towards the end of your workouts when you're kind of fatigued after doing compound lifts. You'll get a better bang for your buck, i.e. the movements you... I don't know what the fuck I was trying to segue into there. I don't know what that was. Anyways, I'm not editing that out. Let's stay in. But regardless of gender, it's just that you substitute, say, you know, bench press for sumo glute deadlift if you're female trying to build your glutes, or glute bridges, you know, movement patterns that require quite a lot of weight that you're still failing at 8 to 10 reps, but you're lifting quite a considerable amount of weight. You know, if you're able to swing 40 kilos on a barbell curl, it's probably not your biceps moving that weight. It's everything else. It's your hips. You know, you're swinging your hips and you're losing all types of form. And I see it, you know, I used to train in the bodybuilding gym and I would see people loading up fucking 20 kilos on either side of a barbell and swinging the shit out of it. I'm like, fuck. I'm like, you're working everything else. I'm like, you're working your hips, you're working your lower back, you're working your shoulders, and I'm sure your biceps are getting hit there somewhere, but they're not the main movement, or they're not the main exercise that's moving the waist. So I would consider a 5x5 program if strength is your goal, but I'd probably lean more towards a hypertrophy-based program if you're trying to build muscle. Next question. Binged for 3 days. How can I bounce back from this? So I kind of have two approaches to this one. One is get back on track today. And this is for anyone that's ever binged in the past and has beaten themselves up over it, or anyone that may potentially binge in the future so that you don't beat yourself up in the future. It's the same as when you have one bad day, you know, and people beat themselves up over one bad day, myself included. I was the worst for it, where I'd eat a load of shit or I'd miss a workout and then I'd be like, ah, fuck it. I'm like, all my progress is ruined. And that would normally roll into 2 days and 3 days of self-pity until I came out of it again. And that doesn't help at all, because the analogy I've used on the podcast in the past, having one bad day and then saying fuck it to everything, it's kind of like getting a flat tire in your car and then slashing the other three tires because one of them went flat. You know, that's exactly what you're doing with your diet when you binge for, say, in this case, 3 days, and then you're like, oh shit, you know, it's all gone to hell. There's nothing I can do. I've ruined my progress. It's like, you haven't ruined your progress. You know, you're not going to get in shape in 3 days. You're also not going to ruin all your progress in 3 days. You know, that's the... When I had Trish's transformation on the podcast a while back, she's got a great protocol called resetting. She's like, all right, you've had a bad day, or you've had a bad meal, or you've had a crap workout, reset. Now get the next one right. And I think when you go with that approach towards your diet and towards your training and towards your lifestyle in general, it sets you up for long-term success. Like, getting in shape is a marathon. It's not a sprint. You know, that's why when people are promoting expedience and things like fad diets or the next silver bullet supplement to fucking get in amazing shape, it annoys the shit out of me, because it's selling an idea of this is what's going to happen to you quickly if you take this or use this, i.e. buy my product. And that really frustrates the crap out of me, because it sends a really negative message, because a lot of those things do work. You know, fad diets, massive calorie restricted diets, really strong fat burning supplements that normally get banned in 6 or 7 months, they all work, because they either massively reduce your calories, which allow you to tap into fat stores, or they massively suppress appetite, which means you're not going to be hungry, which further reduces your calories, meaning that you're going to lose body fat when you reduce your calories. And the reason that they annoy me so much is because they do work, but they end up sending kind of a mixed message on cause and effect, because you now have this tool in your toolkit that you think you need to go to every time you need to lose weight. That's why Weight Watchers, Slimming World, Juice Plus, and by all means, the community aspect of those are really, really good. But the reason people go back to them is because they've got what I call man with a hammer syndrome. It's like, to the man with a hammer, the whole world looks like a nail. And when you learn how to lose weight one way, you think that's the only way. So if you put the weight back on, instead of getting a normal cause and effect on, oh, that worked for a while and I lost weight and now the weight's back on, it's like, well, I need to go back and do the thing that made me lose weight again, not challenging the fact that the thing you used clearly didn't work because you put the fucking weight back on. So it makes this mixed signal of cause and effect. And when that happens, it makes it very, very difficult to find a strategy that works for you long term, because it's too easy to go back on it. And it's the same exact, you can replace Weight Watchers, Slimming World, Juice Plus with fat burners, over-the-counter fat burners, or whatever method that you found works for you. You know, it's the same as if you train twice a day and eat less food, you'll also lose weight, but you're not going to be able to sustain that long term. And that may work short term if you have a holiday, an event, a photo shoot, something you're trying to look amazing for, but it's not a long term sustainable approach, because for most people, unless you're a professional athlete and you don't have all the other stresses of life, or there's other people coming in taking all the stresses of life away from you, there's a good chance that the excess cortisol from all the training on top of all the other life stresses, because stress is cumulative, it's going to add up, and as a result you tend to shut down, i.e. burnout is what a lot of people call it. And when you burn out, then you have to take a massive break, which means you can't train, you normally end up eating more food, and that is what compounds over time, because you fall off track for several weeks, several months, as opposed to 3 days. So if you binge for 3 days, don't let it set you back. I've gone off on a complete tirade, a fucking tirade on a rant. I have too much coffee today. But if you binged for 3 days or binged for 1 day, don't beat yourself up. Just get back on track. And remember, if you ever think about, well, fuck, and I've done this, this is why I kind of say it so wholeheartedly, because I was the worst for binging on a Saturday that would roll on to a Sunday and then into a Monday, and then like on Tuesday I'm like, oh, okay, I got it now, I get back on track today, or Friday, Saturday, Sunday, which is actually more accurate in terms of the way it used to fall down for me. And I would literally do that. I would binge on a Friday or have a cheat meal on a Friday that wasn't structured, and then I'd be like, ah, fuck it, the whole thing's gone. And I would do the same thing on Saturday and Sunday. So that's 3 days out of seven during the week that I would just completely fall off track. And then I used to try and work extra hard on the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday to try and feel better about the fact that I'd eaten so much and either not trained or eaten in excess around the fact that I had trained, and then just felt crap about myself. And then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, that would just kind of eat up, and I'd be consumed by the fact that I need to train and I need to massively drop calories to actually feel better. And that's not a long-term sustainable approach. I did that for about 18 months, probably nearly closer to 2 years. And it's not sustainable. It's not a good idea. And not to mention the mindset roller coaster that you get from not being disciplined enough to do what you said you were going to do, and all the negative self-talk that comes alongside it. It's not worth compounding that over time, you know, snowballing that effect over time. So I would nip it now and use what I used to get me over it initially, which was the analogy that if you get a flat tire, there's no point slashing the other three tires just because one has gone flat. That's the exact same thing with your diet. If you have one bad day, or in this case, three bad days, don't slash and ruin the whole weekend or ruin the whole week or ruin the whole diet just because you've had a couple of bad days. Okay, next question. What happens if you eat fat in your post-workout meal? So this is one that I fleshed out a little bit on my Instagram stories, and I wanted to kind of piggyback on it for this question or this answer in this podcast, because eating fat post-workout meal, depending on who you talk to, you tend to get very ideological approaches on both sides, or very ideological opinions on both sides, where people are like, don't eat fat in your post-workout meal, that's a terrible idea. And you have other people who are kind of keto advocates or fat adapted athletes who are like, don't eat carbohydrates at all, don't mind your post-workout meal, just eat fat. And again, like fucking most things, the truth is somewhere in the middle, because it depends on your end goal. There's benefits and there's negatives to eating fat in your post-workout meal, and then it just depends on what you're trying to achieve. So every nutritional plan or diet that you follow should always reverse engineer whatever goal it is that you have. So in the context of, say, body composition, so you're actually trying to lose body fat, tone up, build lean muscle tissue, fat generally post-workout isn't going to be the best strategy for changing body composition for a couple of reasons. So assuming that you're not overweight and obese or a keto adapted athlete, your body's very, very insulin sensitive after training. So if you've worked out, particularly a high intensity program or a resistance training program, weights workout program, you're going to be quite insulin sensitive after your workout, meaning that your body will absorb the carbohydrates that you're eating more effectively than at other times of the day. Insulin sensitivity, a phrase you may have heard, just effectively means that your body's utilizing the carbohydrates that it's eating. Insulin resistance, then, on the other end of the spectrum, is that your body doesn't utilize those carbohydrates very effectively. People that are overweight and obese tend to be quite insulin resistant, or people that are skinny fat, you can also see some insulin resistance in that, hence why it's all accumulating. I need a thesaurus or some synonym book, but that's why all the body fat kind of accumulates around your stomach, and that's normally down to an insulin resistance issue, meaning that you don't tolerate carbohydrates that well. Now, there's so many factors that come into play there, because the type of carbohydrate can be worlds apart, you know. So a simple sugar from, say, some Haribo sweets or some Coca-Cola bottle sweets, which is primarily glucose, is carbohydrate, and a sweet potato and porridge or oats is also carbohydrate. One is a simple sugar and one is a complex carbohydrate. The only real difference, well, there's lots of differences, but the main difference is one spikes your blood sugars very quickly. So you have some cola bottles or some penny sweets and it spikes your blood sugars very quickly, whereas sweet potato, oats, complex carbohydrates tend to give you a slow, steady release in blood sugar, so you get a steady release of energy. One spikes energy, one gives you a slow, steady release. And when you're post-workout, this again depends on the goal as well, but some people, particularly that are hard gainers that need the extra calories, tend to work very well with some highly fast absorbing simple sugars directly after training. So that's why a lot of people will take, you know, some form of fruit juice or a Gatorade or a Lucozade Sport or a sports drink, trying to replenish glycogen stores through simple sugars. My personal preference is complex carbohydrates post-workout. So people that are coming through my programs, particularly my BKF online program, which is my body composition program, so building muscle, toning up, losing body fat, I like to have complex carbohydrates in that post-workout meal. I'm actually not a massive fan of spiking blood sugars for the majority of people I work with in body composition programs. People in my GA lean body program, slightly different because of the nature of the sport and the glycolic-based sport. But for people just trying to improve their body composition and look better, I'm not a huge fan of spiking blood sugars at any stage. You know, I prefer to save it for a free meal or a cheat meal at a weekend and then kind of go have at it, whatever it is that you want. And the reason I do complex carbohydrates is for that insulin sensitivity reason. You tend to be quite insulin sensitive, particularly when you're following a high intensity program, which is the one that my program is based on. Eating fat, the downside to eating fat normally is that you don't take advantages of that post-workout window where you're going to absorb the carbohydrate quite well, in terms of just an overall absorption rate. And having fat post-workout may also slow down the absorption of the protein in that meal, assuming you're eating protein in that meal as well. And what you want to do after you've worked out, particularly if you've done a resistance training program and you're trying to build lean muscle tissue, is you want to flood your body with amino acids from protein that you eat. So some people do this with a whey protein shake. Some people do this with an actual meal, so chicken, fish, post-workout, and they'll have some easily digestible protein source post-workout to try and speed up recovery. Again, your nutritional and supplemental protocol is going to be based off your end goal, but that's what a lot of people do when composition is the main thing that they're trying to achieve. What happens when you eat fat in your post-workout meal then is you're just kind of missing a window of opportunity to either eat carbohydrates to or replenish glycogen stores so that you're fueled for the next workout, or the you may get a slowdown in the absorption of the protein, which is what you really need post-workout from those amino acids in order to recover fully. So there's a couple of pros and cons to that, as I mentioned. For me, and I'm going to add this as kind of a footnote, I actually don't use complex carbohydrates in most of my post-workout meals. Now, this is context dependent on what I'm training for at the time. Because if I'm doing a CrossFit style workout or a high intensity metabolic conditioning style workout, I actually take some simple sugars directly after training, normally in the form of like coconut water. So I use, I think it's Coco Fusion is the name of the brand, and I just have coconut water directly after training, and I normally add some glutamine to that, because of if the workout has been very, very high intensity, it just kind of kickstarts my glycogen replenishment, and also the electrolytes in there help me because I tend to feel a bit dizzy and just a bit slow if I don't get some simple sugars and electrolytes directly after training if it's been very, very high intensity. So with the exception of that style of training, I normally go with fat post-workout, meaning that my post-workout meal, and this isn't optimal for most people, but it works very well for me because it fits into my lifestyle and schedule, is I normally go with salmon and vegetables post-workout. So that's a fat source, a little bit of protein as well, and then micronutrients from the vegetables, which is normally a mixture of broccoli, cauliflower, red peppers, yellow peppers, parsnips, carrots, some spinach sometimes, and I just throw in a mixture in there. And that's generally what I do post-workout. But body composition isn't a main priority of goal of mine, and it hasn't been in about 18 months. I train for my mental health. I train for performance to a degree. And if I'm training for an event, you know, an ultramarathon or something that I plan on doing, I specify my nutrition based on whatever it is I'm trying to achieve at that event. In the case of me training for, say, an ultramarathon, where I'm planning to run, you know, 50 to 100 kilometers or more if it's a multi-day event, I do mostly fat adaption style diet. So most of my diet is fat-based. So it's about 80% plant-based, and then the rest is coming from fat and protein. And that's what works very well for me. It fuels my body. I feel great with it. My intensity in my workouts doesn't suffer greatly, but as soon as I start doing more high intensity CrossFit style metabolic conditioning style workouts, I feel that my carb needs go up. So as a result with that, I'll adjust that. And with it, I will increase my carbohydrates post-workout. So I'll have some basmati rice, or I'll have a sweet potato, or I'll have some porridge oats. And that just tends to fuel everything. But again, the reason I share that is to show that it depends on the goal and depends on the person and depends on the schedule. What I've spoken about on the podcast in the past, particularly in the nutritional episodes, and I kind of hammered this home in the nutritional FAQ that I did towards the back end of last year, that the best diet you can follow is one that fits into your lifestyle and schedule, that includes foods that you enjoy, and that's in alignment with your goals. And I come back to that question quite regularly when I'm training for something. So the reason that I have, say, one isolated meal, say a post-workout meal in this case, is that it includes foods that I enjoy, vegetables and salmon. It fits into my lifestyle and schedule. It works very well for meal preparation. I can take it with me, and it's in alignment with my goals, trying to make myself a little bit more fat adapted so that I don't need to consistently get carbohydrates, and I'm able to go longer periods if I'm trying an intermittent fast, and just my body's more fat adapted for, say, those long endurance runs or long endurance events that I tend to try and put my body through. So always reverse engineer it off your goal. What happens when you eat fat in your post-workout meal? Again, what happens when you eat most things in your post-workout meal? Your body will absorb that in a certain way and then make the decision on what you eat post-workout based on whatever goal it is that you're trying to achieve right now. Okay, next question. What's your go-to workout? So I was thinking about this, and to be honest, I only have two real go-to workouts. And if you've ever been through my BKF online program or you're currently coming through it, you may know the answer to this one already, because I actually factor these in on week 3 and week 6 of that program to my advanced trainers. So I've got two go-to workouts. One is my ladder workout, which you may have seen on my Instagram wall from Easter Monday. So I call it like the post Easter egg workout, which is effectively just my ladder workout when I've completely eaten too much fucking sugar or chocolate, where I'm like, right, time to go do the ladder workout. And that's effectively 3 movements that I ladder up in repetitions of 3, or increment of 3 repetitions in every single set. So the 3 moves I normally pick are barbell thrusters, which is like a front squat to overhead press, a dumbbell burpee pop-up, which I call a dumbbell burpee pop-up, which is like a push-up with a burpee with no jump, but with 2 dumbbells in your hands. I normally use 15 kilos, and a spider push-up, which is just a normal push-up, but you're bringing your knees up to your elbows. And what I do with those 3 movements to ladder them is I'll do 3 repetitions of each. So 3 thrusters, 3 pop-ups, 3 spider push-ups, and then I'll go up to 6 reps. And I'll do 6 thrusters, 6 pop-ups, 6 spider push-ups, then I'll go to 9, I'll go 9, 9, 9, 12, 12, 12, 15, 15, 15, and then depending on whether that's my entire workout or it's a finisher, I'll go up to 18, 18, 18, and some days 21, 21, 21, if that's my entire workout. So for example, on Easter Sunday, because I'd eaten like fucking 10 Easter eggs on fucking Easter Sunday, on Easter Monday, I went in and did that as my full workout, and I went up to 21, and that workout is fucking disgusting. Like, it's just so hard, and like, it's fine until like 9 reps, and then you get to 15 and you're just losing the will to live. But it's amazing. Like, the metabolic spike you get from that, if you're following it as normal in a workout program, is incredible. Like, you just feel that all the food you're eating, from this is anecdotal, you feel that all the food you're eating is just getting sucked up by the muscle because you're just craving those nutrients. So I love the way that workout makes me feel. Or if I've overindulged on food and gone way above on simple sugars, particularly with too much chocolate, it just gets everything back to baseline. I normally try and do that workout fasted, and it just takes some caffeine or a cup of coffee, and that tends to work well. The other go-to is also one that I use in my BKF online program in week 3 and week 6 for the advanced trainers, and that's the 25 workout. So some of you may have seen this on my Instagram stories as well, because I change up the workouts that I'm doing or the exercise that I'm doing, but I keep the same system because it's super simple. It's effectively 25 repetitions, 4 sets, 2 to 4 movements, 4 rounds, rest only as needed. So for example, a kettlebell swing and spider push-up. So I might do 25 reps on a kettlebell swing, 25 reps on a spider push-up, 25 reps on kettlebell swing, 25 reps on spider push-up, and I repeat that for 4 times. So it's 100 reps of each move. That's one of my favorite go-to finishers as well, because it's really easy. If I'm traveling and I'm in a hotel room, I also have this as an option in the home workout version of that BKF online program, because it's actually the one I do when I travel, is either the ladder system, the 333-666-999 system with body weight movements, or the 25 reps with 2 to 4 movements and just repeat it on cycle like a circuit. So if I'm in a hotel room, I might pick 3 moves, like a squat, a push-up, and a mountain climber, and do 25 reps of each, 3 rounds or 4 rounds, and I'll just rotate and then rest as often as I need to. That tends to work very well as a high intensity session. They're kind of my go-to workouts. I have personal preference for push-pull leg splits when I'm in the work, when I'm actually trying to change a little bit of body composition. I quite like metabolic conditioning workouts, some style of CrossFit endurance if I'm training for an ultra endurance event, but they're definitely my go-to workouts, the ladder in particular, because that thing never gets fucking easier. Like, because as you get stronger, you just increase the weight on the thruster or the dumbbells, or you increase the speed if you're able to keep the you increase the speed by reducing the rest period as you get fitter and more accustomed to the movement, so you never get fucking any better at it. So it kills you every time. But yeah, that's my personal go-to workout. And go check out my Instagram wall as well. I've got a load of those workouts and similar ones that I do up on that wall, and I post them every week. Next question fucking hell, what is up? I thought I took too much coffee today, and then I'm like, you're not even speaking words the way words are supposed to be spoken. So maybe I didn't drink enough coffee today. Maybe I should have another cup. I'm not going to have another cup. Because if I have another cup... Yeah, I'm not going to have another cup. I have a really bad caffeine addiction as it is. I'm trying to kick it. Like, at some stage in my life, I'm not going to do this right now. Because I'm very aware. I fucking talk about this on the podcast with Paul Dermody all the time. It's like, if there's things in your life that your life would be better if you didn't do right now... Drinking too much coffee is probably one of those things, but I'm not willing to give it up just yet. I'm like, no, I'm not there. So someday, maybe when I'm like out on the street and fucking my family and friends have all abandoned me and they're like, you have a problem, you're an addict. And they're like, a fucking big intervention for my caffeine addiction. I'm like, right, I'll kick it then, but probably until then, not. Anyways, next question is full body workout every day, yes or no? Okay, so full body workout. It depends on whether you're doing that with resistance training or doing that with just body weight. The beauty of body weight training and style, calisthenic style training. So I had the School of Calisthenics on, Tim and Jacko, two awesome guys, were on the podcast late last year. And the two boys are absolutely jacked. Like, the two of them look like they've been pinned off the front of fucking Muscle and Fitness or Men's Health magazine, like, all the time. So calisthenics and bodyweight training can work really, really well. And one of the benefits of bodyweight training is you could potentially do that nearly every day and still recover. And that's one of the reasons that I like that style of training so much. You don't have that luxury with weight training because it has such a higher impact on your central nervous system, on your muscular system, that you normally need to have some form of structured rest days or at least progressively download or progress days where you're reducing the amount of load that you're lifting, so you're not going as heavy or you're not doing as much volume, to actually let your muscular system and central nervous system repair. So when it comes to doing full body workouts every single day, I think you could probably get away with body weight training every single day and not have any overtraining symptoms, assuming that your nutrition and assuming that your sleep are all kind of in alignment with maximum recovery. So if you've listened to the podcast for a while, you know I'm a believer in overtraining, but I think it's very rare. I think under recovery is more like it. And when we think recovery, I'm not just talking some foam rolling and maybe even getting your sleep right. Like, recovery comes in lots of shapes and sizes. You know, stress, as I spoke about earlier, is stress hormone, which is cortisol being the main one. When that's chronic and that is consistently systemic and circulating through your body because you're working out or you're working out too much, you're in a bad relationship, you hate your job, there's something in your life not going well right now, where there's too much circulating cortisol, that can all add up. And as a result, overtraining is normally what comes out the other side. You just fucking fry your central nervous system. Same thing can happen if you're drinking too many stimulants, which I joked earlier on my cup of coffee. I'm like, that, and I've done that. You know, I've been to the point where I've burnt out my adrenals completely for me it was overtraining and overstimulants, overstimulating my central nervous system. This happened really badly when I was competing, because if I was doing back-to-back shows or back-to-back photo shoots, or a lot of photo shoots and shows within a short period of time. So say a two-month window where you're trying to walk around at, you know, 6-7% body fat and trying to drop that on the days of shows. For me to get through my workouts and even get through my day, I was just drinking bucket loads of coffee, and I was using fat burners, which also have a load of caffeine in them. So my adrenals were completely fried, and central nervous system fatigue is a very real thing. Like, it's something that when you actually get it, it's horrible. Like, my symptoms, it shows up differently for different people. The symptoms for me were a reduction in sex drive. So it wasn't that I wasn't able to have sex, I just didn't want it. That can go further to the point that you physically can't, guy or girl, where you're just like, nope, this isn't happening. And again, it's a basic survival mechanism of your body. Your body's like, nope, we think we're going to die. Our body fat's so low, you're not ready to procreate. We're putting that on hold for the minute. So when I understood a little bit of what was going on from kind of an evolutionary physiological standpoint, I was like, oh shit, I probably shouldn't do that to my body anymore. But that's what happened. So that was one sign. Also, my sleep was really bad. So what would happen for me was I actually didn't have any problem falling asleep, but I would wake up in the middle of the night to, you know, go to the toilet, or I'd wake up in the middle of the night to just wake up, and then I was wired. You know, Ben Greenfield talked on the podcast about, you know, being tired but wired, and that's what happens when you're completely burning out your adrenals. And that can happen from too many stimulants, but that can also happen from too much training, but they tend to come in alignment with one another. And I've spoken on the podcast in the past, the way I like to use caffeine, coffee, and stimulants in general, even though I joked about it earlier, is I treat it like a drug. You know, I treat caffeine like a drug, which is what it is. It's just the most popular drug in the world. And when you treat it like that, you give it a bit more respect as opposed to kind of taking it willy-nilly. And the reason I do that is I tend to take 2 days off of caffeine every single week. So normally Saturday and Sunday, at least one full day, and I try and take two. And the reason I do that is because it keeps me quite caffeine sensitive. So when I take it on a Monday or a Tuesday, and I'm trying to get a lot of creative tasks done, or I'm trying to get a very hard workout done, it hits my system much, much better than had I not taken that break. And what was happening with me before was I was taking caffeine just to get through the day, and I was taking stimulants just to get through the day. And that's not a sustainable way to live long term, regardless of what you're trying to do. You know, it's definitely not a sustainable way to be healthy, but it's not a sustainable way to stay in shape either, because you'll eventually burn that candle so much that it completely burns out, and then you actually have to take like a month break just to let everything reset. And overtraining can come from that. You know, central nervous system fatigue can come from that. And my main issue with people training every single day, i.e. 7 days a week, if it's not body weight and they're actually doing resistance training or they're doing metabolic conditioning workouts, is you tend to look for the crutches that get you through the workout, i.e. a can of Red Bull, a can of Monster, a pre-workout, a fat burner, cups of coffee, to actually get you through the session because you're so fatigued. My system and the way that I try and do this 99 out of 100 workouts is I take caffeine. This is going to sound so counterintuitive, but you may have heard me speak about this in the past. I try and take caffeine on the days I don't need it before my workout. And just to flesh that out a small bit, my feedback on if I should or shouldn't train today is, do I need caffeine to get through this workout? If the answer is, fuck, you really need a cup of coffee or some caffeine tablets or a pre-workout to get through this workout, it's my body signal that you shouldn't train today, that I haven't slept well enough, I haven't been eating consistently enough, or my body just needs a break. And I use that as a metric to scale back on my workout. And I normally give myself a rest on that day. The reason I do that is because it's very easy to take the stimulant and actually power through the workout. But if you've done that in the past and you've lived like me, you normally find that you either push yourself into overtraining, you end up getting that central nervous system fatigue, or you end up getting sick, which is normally what happens to me, where my immune system gets massively compromised and I end up getting sick, and then I have to take a fucking week off training. And that's what happens. So that's something worth recognizing when you're considering training every single day, that if you need a crutch to get through the workout, it's probably a sign you actually need a rest day. And the reason that I use caffeine and the reason I treat it as a drug before I do workouts is because on the days that I'm like, I actually could get through my workout fine today without caffeine, I take it and it moves my energy levels from an 8 or 9 to a 10. And then I have an amazing workout. So that's kind of lots and lots of years of trial and error. But that's effectively what I do with it now. And I would apply it to whatever stimulant you have a preference for. That might be a can of Monster, that might be Red Bull, that might be another stimulant drink, that might be a pre-workout, or that might be just a cup of coffee or some caffeine pills. I just use caffeine pills before I train, and that can be an effective long-term strategy and stop yourself from overtraining. So when it comes to full body weight workouts every single day, you're going to get some muscular recovery because the fact that you're not smashing chest four times a week and you're not smashing back four times a week, you're hitting them every day, but a little bit, little and often, which is an effective training strategy. But I would just guard against overtraining, which can definitely happen in either a split where you're doing, say, push-pull legs, or a split where you're doing an upper-lower body split, or a full body split every single day. Just guard against that overtraining and watch out for the signs of it. And try that. Try the caffeine rule or the pre-workout rule, that take it on the days that you feel you don't need it, because then at least if there's consistent days where you're like, I really can't train today because I need a pre-workout to get through it, you can go back and look at the drawing board and what's going wrong in your lifestyle. Are you stressing too much because work has really been on top of you the last few weeks? Is there a problem in your relationship and you're just like using the gym as an escape and you just need to numb out with some stimulants and some music and just train? Or are you not sleeping well? Or is your diet poor and you need the fake energy, i.e. the stimulant energy, to get through your workout? You have better feedback on where you need to improve. And as I said, 99 out of 100 times, one out of 100 times if I'm traveling, particularly across time zones, I'll take caffeine or a pre-workout or some form of stimulant to get me through the workout because I'm just so knackered and I know that the workout will actually benefit me more in a net score in the long game. But I try and keep that as the 1 out of 100 as opposed to the 99. So full body workouts every day, yes or no? It depends on a lot of different factors. My advice would be guard against the overtraining aspect of that. Then try it, test it, and see how you find it. Okay, next question. This is a completely left field question, but I'm going to answer it on here just because I answered a question similar to this about a year ago. And I got a lot of private messages from guys particularly, but some from some girls who were going out with guys, about lad problems. So the question that I did about a year and a half ago was, I can't keep it up for hot chicks. That was what I titled the Q&A. It was the last question on a Q&A, because that was the mess, the DM that got sent in. And I got a lot of private messages off the back of that. So I'm going to answer this one as well, just because even though it's a bit abstract and out there, it is something I think I can hopefully provide value in and help with. So the question is, this is a bit awkward, but I keep going soft during sex. I'm only 20. Any ideas why? So I'm going to answer this from a couple of different standpoints, because irrespective of age, this can be a problem for most guys at some stage. You know, I love, there's a joke in Friends, I think it's Ross and Chandler and Rachel, where she's like, it's not a big deal, and it is a big deal. It's, what's the line? You know, it doesn't happen that often, it isn't that normal, and it is a big deal. And then Chandler jumps out at Rachel, she's screaming at Ross when they break up, and he's like, I knew it! And, like, every lad that's ever watched that laughs, and every girl that's ever watched that laughs, because they're like, they can all instantly connect to this. But there's a couple of things to look at when it comes down to sexual function, and this kind of works for both genders as well. Obviously, the physicalities are going to be completely different, but the same thing in terms of libido can affect both genders. It tends to be a little bit worse with guys, because females, from my experience, when their libido drops, it's a case that they generally don't want to have sex, where guys can have actually a physical manifestation of a problem, i.e. going soft or not being able to stay erect. So what I would look at here is understanding the difference between psychological and physical, because there's two very, very different approaches to take if you're not able to maintain an erection during sex. That is the psychological aspect, which is normally where you're inside your head too much and you're thinking too much about it. And that's a real problem, particularly for younger guys. This happens with a lot of sexually inexperienced guys as well, but particularly with younger guys, until you get comfortable with your partner or your mate, you tend to find that there's so much, similar to what I spoke about earlier, so much systemic cortisol circulating through your body because you're overthinking the entire situation, and as a result, you can't maintain an erection during sex. So that tends to dissipate with a couple of things. One, where you get more confident by either having more sexual partners, or two, you commit to that mate and you end up getting more sexual experience with that single person, and as a result, this problem just goes away. So they're the psychological approaches. Both work, you know, for a lot of cases, and I'm sure there's many other areas that sexual psychologists can talk about. Again, I'm not a psychologist in that area. This is just me offering some anecdotal experience or anecdotal opinion based on either personal experience or experience with people that I've came in contact with or I've spoken to. And the psychological aspect, again, it's exposure therapy. When you're going out and meeting lots of different people and sexually interacting with them, it's exposure therapy, which effectively means that you keep exposing yourself to the thing you're afraid of until you become less afraid of it. The commitment bias then is the other side, where your psychological stress, commitment bias isn't the right word, I've forgotten the psychological term, where you commit to one partner and as a result your cortisol and your stress goes down as you become more comfortable with that person. That's why you're more nervous on a first date than say a 10th date, because you're more comfortable around the person. You know, it's similar, I suppose. It's a type of exposure therapy. It just happens to be channeled into one person as opposed to frequent partners. So there's two ways to look at the psychological aspect. The physical aspect is actually an area that I'm quite schooled in, because it's important for me as someone that works with a lot of fitness people, particularly guys in my either BKF online program that are older, or in this case maybe younger, and my GA Lean Body program, because sexual function or sexual dysfunction tends to give me quite decent feedback on what's going on hormonally. So when there's a physical issue, again, similar to what I spoke about earlier with overtraining, it's not necessarily a problem when someone has sexual dysfunction physically. It's like, I'd rather know, and then you can put plans in place around it to improve it. It also means that if there's low testosterone, there's normally a lifestyle factor in there that I'm like, well, I'd rather address that now, because your quality of life will be significantly better if we can improve that lifestyle factor, and not to mention your sex drive. So in my second book, Leaner, Stronger, Faster, there's two versions of that book, GA Leaner, Stronger, Faster, which is for GA players, and then Leaner, Stronger, Faster, which is for general athletes, so soccer players, rugby players, basketball players, etc. And there's a testosterone boosting section in there, which speaks about the foods to eat, testosterone boosting foods, supplements to use, and some lifestyle strategies and tips, which is one is reducing alcohol, and the other being improvement of sleep. So from a physical standpoint, if your libido has dropped, and this works quite similarly for both genders, if your libido has dropped, I would first look at things like, as I mentioned earlier, because there's a theme in this episode about circulating cortisol. If there's too much stress in your body overall, because you're overtraining, you're under recovering, you're not eating well, you're completely stressed out, that's going to physically manifest itself in your sex life. So I would look at the reduction of stress. I had Ori Hofmeckler on the podcast a while back, and his book, I've forgotten the name of it. It's a book about stress, 7 Rules for Stress, something along those lines, but he talks about how too much stress kills your sex drive. So that podcast, I'll try and link that in the show notes as well. That podcast talked about the effects of too much stress reducing your sex drive in general for both genders, but particularly for men. And what I would look into is make sure that's not an issue, so that there's not too much circulating cortisol going through your body. I would look at your alcohol consumption. If you're regularly consuming alcohol, which you might be at 20 years of age, I would consider reducing that back, just because of the estrogen effect of alcohol, which is going to have a negative effect on testosterone. I would look at your nutrition. If you're eating a lot of fast food takeaways, a lot of food devoid of nutrients that your body needs to maintain physical health, such as, you know, too many takeaways, processed ready meals, I would look at that. Definitely, because there's certain vitamins and minerals that are going to support sex drive. Zinc is the one that jumps to mind straight away. So zinc is a precursor for testosterone, meaning that if you have inadequate levels of zinc in your body, you're not going to produce as much natural testosterone as you would if you had adequate levels. And zinc, either in a supplement form, but I like it personally from whole food form. So steak is a great source of zinc, or pumpkin seeds if you're vegan or vegetarian, both very, very good forms of zinc. So if you're devoid of those nutrients, and there's lots of different ones that are going to have a positive or negative effect, or positive effect, apologies, on your sex drive, I would look into those as well. But at 20 years of age, it's worth getting on top of now. It doesn't matter if you're 30 or 40. If this is a problem or has been a problem, use your lack of sex drive or your inability to keep an erection as direct feedback that you need to improve something. There's something physically wrong with your body. And in a lot of cases, and I've found a lot of my guys that have came through my GA Lean Body program and my BKF online program have found an improvement in their sex drive, actually with females as well, with a couple of tweaks and changes, particularly some older females coming through. And I found that they've found a massive improvement in their sex drive, even though that wasn't a direct target at the beginning, but as a byproduct of setting up an environment for good things to happen, which is eating good quality food, focusing on good recovery, following training programs that don't put you into overtraining, but create enough stimulus and acute cortisol, or the difference between acute cortisol short stressors, which are very, very beneficial for the body, i.e. training, sauna, heat therapy, exposure to cold. Acute stressors, short-term stressors are very good for your body. It's chronic stress that's bad. So stress that, you know, from somebody shouting at you all day because, you know, your family hates you, or you hate your family, or your boss hates you, or, you know, training 10 hours a day. Like, too much stress and chronic stress is what's bad for you, but acute stress is actually a very, very good thing. And when you understand that, and when I built the program around those factors, yes, they'd build more lean muscle tissue, they'd lose body fat, they'd get fitter, stronger, if it was the case of the GEA program, but they'd also come back and say, well, look, my sex drive is massively improved. And that's down to a nutritional aspect, a minimizing of alcohol, focusing on high quality sleep, and then adding in certain supplements that may be needed to fill in the gaps that they're not getting in nutrition because of food preferences. So hopefully that helps. The main thing for somebody with any sort of psychological dysfunction, by all means, talk to a counselor or a psychologist if you feel you need to explore it further. That can help a lot by just getting it off your chest and talking to somebody. But understand the difference between psychological inability to perform and a physical inability to perform, because they're two different things. But when you know which one is the primary cause of the issue that you're having, you can put plans in place around it. So hopefully that helps. So wide-ranging questions today. So beach body look, 5x5, binging, fat post-workout, go-to workouts, full-body workouts, and a little bit of soft sex. Well, soft? So going soft during sex. So real massive wide-ranging Q&A for today. So yeah, hopefully you helped it. Let me know. I haven't been doing as many of the Q&As as I have previously because of, again, been very fortunate with amazing guests. But keep me posted. Let me know what you think of the Q&As, just because if you've got this far, hopefully it's provided value. But let me know, because I'm always looking for feedback, good, bad, or indifferent. You know, if you prefer guests or you prefer solo topics that aren't Q&A, let me know, because I base everything I do on the podcast off feedback. And if you're enjoying this style and format, let me know, tag it in your stories, or even hit me up on DM and be like, yeah, like the Q&As, but I prefer the guests, or I prefer that. You know, that feedback is what gives me direction, and all I'm trying to do is provide value in any way that I can. So if the Q&As help, let me know. If the solo episodes work better, let me know. If you prefer having guests and kind of the bounce back from that, let me know as well, because I will do more of whatever it is that you are looking for in whatever way I can provide the most help and value. So massive thank you for listening. Have a killer day. Catch you all real soon.